there can be coarse language and adult concepts in our program. So please watch out for little ears that might be running around if you've got your podcast playing, or pop on some headphones, and that way no one can get offended but you.
I think that's just something so important for any author, is to make sure they read their books aloud. It's just so important, and not just to read it aloud, but to try and perform it.
You're listening to the Rights for Women podcast, where we talk everything women and writing. I'm Kel Butler, podcaster and wannabe author.
And I'm Pamela Cook, author of 4 published books and a professional writing teacher. Together, we created the Rights for Women podcast to celebrate women writers and support women's rights.
We'll start with half an hour of chat with some brilliant female, trans or non-binary author. And whether you're a reader or a writer, you're going to love our chats on the Convo Couch this year.
In the second half hour, Kel and I will be chatting about the writing themes and challenges that resonated with us most out of the interview, both as women and as writers. So if you are a woman writing,
or if you like women in writing,
if you like women who write,
or writing by women,
then the Rights for Women podcast is for you.
Listen to all of our episodes at www.rightsforwomen.com, or subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your pods. Who we've got on the the Rights for Women podcast today is Miles Pollard, who you may know from McLeod's Daughters, and you'll certainly recognise that voice. And he's here with Sarah Williams. And Sarah Williams has actually done some extraordinary things. Sarah has gone out and not only self-published her own books, but she's also self-published her own audiobook. She set up a publishing company to assist others in their journey of publishing amazing romance, and has also put out a vlog and is set up her entire social media platform and helps other authors do the same thing. She's a fairly extraordinary human being, and I think an inspiration to all of us. So welcome, Miles and Sarah, to Rights for Women today.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me, Kel.
So, Sarah, I guess we're here to talk about your sort of self-publishing journey, especially with this audiobook, The Brothers of Brigadier Station, which is one of, I believe, 4 books. Is that right? It's a series of 4 books?
Yeah, there's 4 of them at the moment, and God knows how long this series will last. It could go on and on forever.
And they get... compared to McLeod's Daughters, I believe.
Yeah, I've had people tell me that, which is kind of a surprise for me when it first happened, actually. But yeah, no, it does. It's always getting compared now. And now that Miles came on board, it's even more so.
So why don't we start there with how you went from having these 4 books, very successful books, nominated for awards, really well received in the romance world, and how you went on this journey to say, I'm going to turn them into audiobooks, because that's no small thing to do on your own, and then how you came to Miles and how all that came together.
Yeah, no worries. So I started reading country and western kind of romances from about aged 14. Steamier than my parents probably would have liked me to be reading. But I've just been reading forever. I decided at 14 I was going to be a writer, but didn't want to rush into anything. So I waited until I was about 34 when I started writing. And that was after I'd had my children. I've got 4 young children. My youngest are twins, and they were about 4, I guess, when I just decided now was the time to start writing. And so as soon as I decided I wanted to be a writer, the next thing that popped up in Townsville, where I was living at the time, was this writer's festival was coming to town. And I went to it. It was free. It was wonderful. And I met Barbara Hannay, the really fantastic Australian rural romance author. And we talked, and she did a presentation about how to write a romance. And it just made me fall in love with it and realize that's actually what I was writing, not all this Nicholas Sparks kind of stories that I thought I was writing. So I went away from that workshop with all of this really useful information and plotted what became, 2 years later, the Brothers of Brigadier Station. And I pitched that, and I got offered a contract, which I actually turned down because I'd been listening to podcasts like Joanna Penn and the Self-Publishing Show and all of these sorts of places. And I thought, no, if I'm going to do this, it's got to be something I do for sort of the next 60 years or something. And I wanted to make some decent money out of it too. And the contract I was offered meant I'd earn like $100 a year or something. So I self-published it. I set up a business, my own publishing press, Serenade Publishing, and went with it. So it was 2 years after I started plotting that it was actually published and out. And now it's been 2 years that it's been out. And it's really exciting. I mean, the only reason I kind of continue to sell that well is I put out a lot of books. So I make sure I put out a book now every 6 months. And, you know, so it just keeps on going and my readers stay interested. So it's been really good. But that one just continues to be my bestseller. So that was when I was thinking I should put this into an audiobook. I have a lot of fans who are dyslexic and visually impaired, and they were kind of saying, would you do that for me? And then I thought about narrating it myself, but as you can tell, I've got this really weird blend of Australian, New Zealand, American accents. I didn't think I was going to be the best person to do that. And so I just kind of had it in my idea, as things happen, the universe kind of, you ask and you shall receive. And it popped up on my Facebook page one day that there was a local charity event here in Mullaney on the Sunshine Coast. They were raising money for my kids' school. And the star of the show, if you say that, was Miles Pollard from McLeod's Daughters. And so it just... yeah, it seemed fated. And so I went to the event and I just kind of blurted it out, would you narrate my books? And he seemed really positive about it. So within a week, I'd been talking to his agent and he'd signed up and auditioned and signed up. And a few weeks after that, I had to fly to Perth. We booked a studio and yeah, he was recording in there. And then I did all the editing for it. So yeah, it's just been a snowballing effect, really.
Yeah, talk about serendipity. It's something, one of those stories where it just feels like it's meant to happen the whole way through. So Miles, may I ask, how did you sort of feel when you had Sarah sort of come up to you at this sort of charity event and ask you to voice her audiobooks? Tell me about that experience.
I think I must have come across as a crazy opportunist. It's weird because, you know, Sarah talks about serendipity and I felt the same thing. I mean, I'd been talking to my agent probably a couple of weeks earlier about, you know, the prospect of doing more voiceovers, and I put a demo down and I'd been talking about doing narration for a while. Like, I listen to a lot of audiobooks, do a lot of traveling. So as soon as she asked me, I was sort of a little bit stunned. I'd love to do it. I've been talking about this for months and months. This would be a great opportunity. Reflection, I probably sound a little bit overzealous, but I just felt like the stars were aligning in some way. So I seized the opportunity and we started that conversation and we continued it, and it happened really, really quickly.
It's amazing. It really does sound, the more you talk to the both of you, like something aligned for exactly where you needed to be at that moment to bring this project together. So then you said, Sarah, it went really quickly. You put it all together and you said you booked a studio. You had to fly to Perth. So tell me about that. Like, how, go through the process, because there are probably a lot of listeners out there who are at, because this is the environment now, who are authors looking to self-publish their works, both on an audio level and in a print level and an ebook level. And it's that detail that you kind of need, and when you're trying to start out, that you need to know.
Yeah.
So yeah, take us through it step by step.
Absolutely. So there's a couple of different ways of doing audiobooks. And like I said, I've been looking at the do-it-yourself version where you narrate it. You know, I'd set up a studio like what I've got at the moment and I'd do it myself. Obviously, that's going to be your cheapest option because you're not having to pay a narrator. Otherwise, you can go through a company like Audible or ACX, which unfortunately we can't because we live in Australia, and it's not open to Australians. So there's another company called Find Away Voices, and you can go direct to them and they will help source a narrator. And then the narrator's in charge of doing all the audio and the narrating, the mixing, the mastering and uploading. Yeah, it's a much more cheaper way of doing it than what I did.
yeah, but it takes all the control out of your hands, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, you end up listening to the audio that this person's done and you get some input and get to say, can you change this or change that, which, you know, would be fine. The thing was, I had actually put my novel up there and it had taken a few weeks and no one had been recommended. And I think it was mainly because I was so specific in what sort of voice and accent I wanted. So, yeah, I chose Miles and I had to fly to Perth because that's where he lives, unfortunately, on the other side of the country. So, yeah, it was just a matter of we needed to set up a studio so I could be there. I'm a control freak. I'm like, you know, it's what you need when you're an indie is to be a control freak. So, yeah, that's why I was there and I was kind of trying not to direct him too much. But towards the end, I had to get a little bit more affirmative. but, yeah, we had a producer in there as well. So once all the recording was done, I was sent all the files back here into the Sunshine Coast. And it took me about a week to actually sift through everything that he'd said and choose the right phrasing, you know, because he'd repeat the same thing sort of three or four times. So you had to cut out the ones you didn't like as much, which was really difficult because they were all pretty much as good as each other, or he'd keep getting better. So, and then I sent it back to the producer and he mastered it and then sent it back to me and I uploaded it through Find Away Voices. So now it's available on Audible, on Kobo, on Google and Apple Books. And there's about 35 other audio book companies out there. And it's doing really well.
So you're getting a good response to it already.
It's going insane. It is just so popular. And the interesting thing is my books have always sold really well in America. You know, it's an Australian outback romance set in Julia Creek in Townsville. And yet 75% of my sales each month are American.
But you traveled to America and you lived in America for a period. So obviously that has influenced your writing to the point where Americans find it really relatable.
Yeah, I also read a lot of Western romances. So things, you know, set in Texas, set in Montana. I love them. But this one, it's very Australian. There's Australian slang. It's Australian spelling. I talk about utes and, you know, they're not trucks, you know, that sort of thing. I've had people review it and they've said, I didn't understand that word and I just had to look it up. And I love that I've learned something about Australia I didn't know before. So it's pretty cool when
That's
you hear
nice.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to switch a bit with that Australian thing back to Miles, because that's exactly one of the reasons you chose Miles, wasn't it? There was that wonderful Australian accent, the drawl, that sort of outback rural sort of twang to it, how beautifully deep and caramelly it is. So, Miles, what was your process creatively to record the audiobook as a voice artist? And talk to me about how different that is from other work that you've done as an actor.
Yeah, I mean, very different mediums, working on TV and in film or even theatre, and, you know, compared to speaking on a microphone in a booth, reading text and not being seen. I mean, a lot of crossover as well. I think it's one of the reasons why I responded so well to McLeod's Daughters and connected with that subject matter was really because that's my experience. Is I grew up in small towns. I lived in the country when I was a kid. So I can really relate with that whole sensibility. So I didn't find connecting with the world and the characters that difficult, to be honest. I feel like it's in my DNA. I suppose the hard part, having never done a narration before for an audiobook, there was a little bit of, trepidation, I suppose. I didn't know what to expect. Having done it, I would definitely do it a little differently. I would be a lot more prepared. There's a real art to trying to tell a story with just your voice, just in terms of pacing or changing your inflection or just working out in the moment which character you are as well. I think that's the intellectual part of the process is who am I, who am I talking to, and what is this scene really about, and doing it really quickly. But that was the fun part too. Like there were moments in the playing of it where I felt so immersed in the world and so in the moment and so oblivious to Sarah staring back at me on a Skype call or the producer sitting opposite me in a glass booth. There were moments where I was just in that story. But, you know, there was also moments where I was absolutely outside of it and self-conscious and thinking to myself, you know, making mistakes and going, okay, this is not really working. So it was a whole gamut, a whole sort of pastiche of different emotions and which I loved. I just loved the adventure of that. It was a really different way of working.
What did you do in those moments where it wasn't gelling for you? Did you sort of have strategy where you started to go, okay, this is where I'm going to break for a bit because I need to sort of step away? Or how did you manage those moments where you weren't in that flow?
Well, definitely taking a break. I mean, look, how long do you read a book for in one sitting? Just reading, probably what, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours max? I mean, we're in the booth 5 hours. And so you're not just reading something and cold reading too to a certain degree, but then having to speak it and act it. So it was exhausting. It was really exhausting. I mean, for me, you know, when it's not working, I'd stop, definitely take a break. I did a lot of breathing, just slowing down and really trying to connect emotionally with the moments. So, you know, sometimes I'm playing an old lady or I'm playing a young girl, you know.
Because you're playing everybody.
Playing everybody. So it's in my process and, you know, and also guided by Sarah was not to play the stereotype or the cliche or go for a really obvious caricature, but try and, you know, connect with their own experience and their own emotion, their own sentiment in terms of the characters, and just allow my voice and my personality to enrich that world and those people, as opposed to playing a really predictable stereotype. So for me, it's all about connecting with the emotional world of those characters.
Because that would be unlike anything you would have had to have done before, wouldn't it? Because you'd normally have a character and you would get to understand that character in depth. You would get in their head, their body, their skin, their soul, and you would learn to walk and talk as them. But in this process, you're switching characters and switching the embodiment of different characters and voices and genders and ages and cultures at the drop of a hat. How is that for your acting muscle?
Oh, it's fantastic. Like it's such a, there was so much growth for me personally doing it. And it's weird. I've been doing quite a few voiceovers lately and I'm getting much more comfortable with it. And just in terms of mic technique and being close or being far away and really exploring the different timbres of your voice. But yeah, I mean, look, it's been an incredible opportunity. You know, I think I've watched animation and kids shows and things like that and thought to myself, I'd love to do this. This is really interesting. It was nice to get the opportunity.
Mm. And how did you find being directed in that situation? How did it work for you?
Yeah, great. I love it. I mean, it's hard to be objective when you're in it. And Sarah's written the book and she's read it about, I don't know how many times, hundreds of times probably, and analysed it and talked about it. And so to get a perspective, you know, sometimes I would say to her, you know, Sarah, there's an altercation here in terms of the characters. Do you want me to be really aggressive with this? Do you want me to be more sort of restrained? Do you want it to be white hot? Do you want it to just be an explosive sort of situation? And she would often just say, try it and then try something else. And so she was pretty clear about what she wanted, which made it easy for me.
And how did it feel for you getting into the head of a woman? Because you spend half the book, more than half the book, I think, in the voices of women and particularly the heroine of the story. How was that for you?
Well, I'm a very sensitive, emotionally fragile human being, Kel, so I definitely relate to female energy. No, I just think, you know, they're human beings. Their essence is are people. They're people with their own fragility and their own experience. I mean, I could see these characters come off the page very clearly to me as well. I mean, I could see the old, you know, brittle, aged sort of fighting sensibility of the old lady, or the young, impulsive, impetuous, egocentric male, or the flighty, narcissistic teenager. You know, those qualities, those archetypes were really clear to me in the reading of it, which is a testament to Sarah's writing more than anything. So I just tried to, I suppose, hone in on a couple of very simple qualities or traits and then lock into the emotional truth of that. So if it was the young girl, you know, she's obviously loves her friend, and she's vivacious, and she's vibrant, and she's energetic, and she's positive, and all those qualities I have, but just sometimes trying to articulate those with a higher timbre in my voice a little bit, and go a bit faster, and make it a little bit more jovial. It's almost just extending some of my own personality to try and fit within that archetype, if that makes sense.
I think acting is such a great exercise. We should all do it a little bit in our lives to be able to, because it's one of the only ways we get the opportunity, apart from reading books, to step inside the skin of another person and try and see through their eyes. And in this process, you've done that beautifully. I've been listening to the book, and it comes off wonderfully. I get every single one of those characters, so it's obvious that that technique has worked well. Now, Sarah, you were saying that it was done a number of times. Is that right? So how did that process go? Did you ask him to say it and then say it again and say it again? Or how was it done? Was it done in chunks and then redone?
Yeah, no, it was all done through first. So we had two sessions in Perth, which went for about, 5 hours each. And it wasn't finished. So then I Skyped in a couple of times to finish it off, and then we Skyped again so that we could get some other things done. When I'd been editing, I'd not quite been 100% happy with a couple of things, or I had said the wrong word or name or something. But yeah, as he went, you know, he's, I think Miles is a little bit of a perfectionist, and he kind of kept going until he was really happy with it. even though I would have been happy with about take three. So. It was a little bit more kind of, a bit of a learning curve for both of us. So we ended up with lots of really, really good takes, and I did spend about 40 hours editing it, because it was sometimes just so hard to choose which one to use, and just make sure that, you know, it sounded like that character should be saying it that particular way and not that take before or that take after. So, yeah.
Did you get a second ear over it to be able to give you some perspective? I imagine you would get lost in all of that from an editing point of view. I know what it's like just doing the podcasts and sifting through all those hours. Yeah.
Yeah, the producer was as well. So he listened to it at the same time, and he caught some mistakes as we went. Because the script, what Miles said, had to be exactly like it is in the script. Or I could change the script, because I'm an indie, so I can just upload a new one, which I did.
I love it.
So, but if you don't get it absolutely exactly the same as the script that goes up on Amazon, then you can't utilize Whisper Sync, which is that great ability with Audible and Amazon, if you've got those two accounts, where you can be reading an ebook and then you can press play on the Audible version. And then,
oh my goodness,
that is
a revelation.
It'll say, do you want to pick up where you were last reading? And you just say yes, and it goes, and it just plays from that spot.
That is just fantastic. I have to go and look at this. Oh, wow. How have I not known about that before?
No, it's great. Yeah, it means you can be reading the ebook, and then you get in the car and you press play, and then you get out.
That
and you start
is
reading.
So good. Yes. I love that on so many levels. So I get then why you'd need it to be exact. Yep. Okay, yeah. To be able to use that. And that sounds like a brilliant facility. So you'd want your listeners and your readers to be able to access it. So you have to be very precise in this particular situation.
Yeah, you do. And, we did pick up a couple of, well, I picked them up, Miles probably didn't notice, but there were a few things that he said, which weren't how it was in the script, you know, slight variations, yeah, as opposed to yep or something like that. And, but it sounded so natural the way he said it that I kept it. I just made notes and then re-edited the script and uploaded it. So it's actually much better now than it was 2 years ago.
And it also goes back to that whole, the power and control you have as an indie choosing to do it yourself. It allows you to make changes midway through and because it's all yours and you have total control.
Yeah, and after having had Miles in my head for 40 hours, he's still there, it's really annoying. I was actually, while we were down there, I was writing the third in the series and it was actually amazing because Lockie was my main character in this third book and he was one of the main characters in that first book. And I'd spent, 2 years in between not having to really talk to Lockie in my head. And so then I'd be writing and I'd just be thinking, how is Miles going to say this when he narrates this book? And it's it just made an incredible difference. And that book actually came out about 3-4 weeks ago now, and it's, oh my God, just selling through the roof, 4- and 5-star reviews, and everyone's loving it to pieces. And it's going to sound so good when it's narrated.
Do you think that's because you had this, you were actually aware of the narrator who's going to be doing it, you know what they're going to sound like. So because of that, you think it had this added sort of depth to it?
Yeah, definitely. I was reading it back to myself and I was kind of going, how would Miles do this? And because I'd spent so much time listening, I knew where he'd, raise his voice at the end or, all the different intonations. So, yeah, it really made it that much better. And the dialogue was a little bit snappier. And, it's hard to kind of explain, but it definitely did do a difference. And I think that's just something so important for any author is to make sure they read their books aloud before they, publish it or send it to a traditional dealer. It's just so important. And not just to read it aloud, but to try and perform it because audio is just going to get bigger and bigger. And it's something, voice first is something we need to be thinking about when we publish.
Absolutely. It's the fastest growing medium in the market at the moment and it doesn't look to be slowing. So you're about to record the other books then?
Yeah, so we'll be going back into the studio in September to record number 2 and 3 in the series. And so that should be really good. I'm actually decided to re-edit the second in the series now that I know what I know. So that's absolutely being dissected at the moment. I'm on my third editor and,
Great. So you're now re-editing the books based on what you've learned through creating the audiobook and now what you know about the voice that's going to be reading them.
Isn't that
extraordinary?
It is.
And once again, you would not be able to do that with a traditional publisher.
No.
There's no way that they would give you that. That is brilliant.
Yeah. Well, if I'd been traditionally published, if I'd accepted that pathetic deal, then it would have meant they would have had all the rights to the audio and they would have been able to choose the narrator. And all those things that just would have been out of my hands.
And it's funny because you were choosing to do this, Sarah, at a time where people were sort of going, oh, don't self-publish. So how did you push past that and still go, no, I believe in myself? It's not an easy thing to get up and believe in yourself like that every day. How did you do it?
I was a member of the Romance Writers of Australia and I pitched in 2016. And then it was still very much, self-publishing. That's only if you're not a very good writer and you can't get a deal with, Harlequin or Hachette or something like that. And when I was running the numbers, because I was looking more globally, I never wanted to publish a book and only get published in Australia. That's a tiny market. And so I was looking at all these overseas entrepreneurs like Joanna Penn. And she was just talking about, you know, there's emerging markets now like China and India, which are going to overtake America. So I was like, no, this is a smart move. It's not the second choice. It's the first choice. And I'm so glad that I did that because I love this industry. And I'm a sponge. Anything I can learn about publishing and books and marketing, I just love it. You know, I definitely spend more time learning business and doing business and ads and those sorts of things than I do writing each day.
Yeah. Well, that's the other side of it, isn't it? You don't have any of the muscle of the publishers behind you when you come to market your books. So you have to do all that yourself. But I see for this, you and Miles are going to be touring around. Is that correct? And you're going around and promoting the audiobook. And so, yeah, talk about that. Talk about then taking on the mammoth task of promoting something like this when you do it yourself.
Yes. Promoting an audiobook is definitely a new experience. And it's something I'm still learning about. I hired a publicist for the first time. So that's really exciting. And she's just doing amazing things. She'll email me going, oh my God, look at this. And I'm like, oh my God. So that's really cool. And, you know, Kobo have been really excited and I've, you know, been interviewed on their podcast. I'm writing blogs for them and all sorts of things at the moment. And there's blog tours you can do and audiobook tours and different reviewers for audiobooks that you can't, you know, get just to do an ebook or something like that. So yeah, it's different. And I think, you know, audiobooks are still fairly new in Australia. So my Australian sales have, you know, been a little bit slow and steady. But like I said, those Americans, they love it. They're just devouring it and they're sharing on Facebook and, you know, sending me their quotes and things, what they love about it. So yeah, it's really awesome.
There's the validation. That's the validation of the choices that you made and that belief right there. It's like, well, look at my numbers. I don't think it was a second choice. Also, if you have a look at it, a lot of published authors are choosing to step away now from their traditional publishers, take control of their career and self-publish. Pam's doing it at the moment. And we're talking to other authors who are also doing it.
I've been approached, and I get approached often by authors who are getting their rights back, and they say, can you help me publish these? Because as well as actually publishing other authors, I just consult and I help them or guide them as to how to do it. And, lots of people, I just signed a really, really famous Australian Regency romance author yesterday. So that was really exciting. And we're going to get her bigger and better with all of her rights. So yeah, I love being able to help those people. And I kind of see indies the way of the future. And yeah, I don't hold much stock in the traditional companies these days, especially the Australian ones.
I think our publishing market is coming to a bit of a crossroads, and I think it's going to have to really take a long, hard look at itself and the way it decides to treat its authors and select what it's selecting to publish and how much it's choosing to publish, how it's doing it, all of it. I think our publishing industry is going to have to take a look because our authors are realizing they can do it themselves nowadays, and it's not as hard as what it used to be. And as you said, you're reaping the rewards over and over again. So my big question to both of you, and I'm actually going to start with Miles here, is what would you or what are you going to change for doing the next audiobook? What are the big takeaways that you got out of doing the first one?
I'll be a little bit more diligent in my prep, Kel. I think I will definitely go through the script, the hard copy, with a fine-tooth comb and do some highlighting. I'll highlight characters with different colours and make all those intellectual choices beforehand. Then I can, and then also make some tool choices as well. Like I could, you know, almost, you know, define different sections in terms of the pacing or what types of objectives I want in those scenes. What am I playing in those moments? I think it's just for expediency because it's not, we worked it out in the first 5-hour session that the pace wasn't sustainable. And that's, had to move faster and I couldn't do 5 takes. I had to do 2 and move through it. So anything that makes the actual narration process efficient and accurate is only a good thing. That's what I would do.
So it's almost like setting up a rehearsal that you would do for, say, a play, except it's a voice rehearsal.
A little bit, yeah. It's like doing all the analysis and all the just going through the text and knowing what I'm saying and knowing who I'm saying it to beforehand. I mean, look, it's nice to wing things, but and this is how you learn, right? You learn by doing, and I didn't have a precedent for this. I didn't know. I didn't have anyone in my world who said, oh, you're doing an audiobook, make sure you do this.
Yeah.
So that's the fun part. I mean, we created something great and, with no experience, but imagine what we can create now with a little bit of hindsight.
Oh, each book will be better and better. Yeah. And you as a voice artist will, I no doubt, push further and just go deeper into the motivations in your characters and get to know your own self and your own voice so much better. So will you be then exploring this voice acting a lot further?
Absolutely. I love it. I mean, it's when you read to your children or little kids, and I did quite a bit of teaching, I love that whole process of watching a room full of children just absolutely mesmerized by your voice and your characterizations and just the fun and the play involved in that. I'd love to do animation. I'd love to get involved in more audiobooks. I think that whole medium is incredible. And what Sarah's talking about in terms of this whole paradigm shift, in terms of the artist being able to go straight to market and creating new agency and new opportunities. I just really dig that. I think that's so inspiring, and your audiobook world is transforming. I'd love to be a part of that. I think it's a really fun space.
Yeah, it's also, I think it opens it up for the artists as well, because it opens up a whole new sector of performance. Voice artistry has never been seen as an elevated form of art, and that's changing so much now. And with Audible putting out Audible series, Spotify putting out Spotify series, Google doing their own audio series, Amazon, all of these things, or Amazon's Audible, all of these things are leading to a boom in the voice artist market for actors. And it's going to open up a whole new space. And actors themselves can start creating with other actors, because the next step from here is fiction series in audio. So for you, it's a whole new world.
Yes, the landscape is changing so quickly, isn't it? And it's an opportunity. Sarah is a living, breathing testament of that. You know, she embodies it, which is being proactive. It's being, really ambitious and entrepreneurial and seeing things as opportunities, not as challenges. I think that's one of the reasons we connected too. Yeah, it is. It's a really nice time to be a part of.
And Sarah, what are your big takeaways?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been asked to do a lot of workshops on audiobook creation now. So I've been putting my slides and things together and just going, what are my takeaways? And what are they? What did I learn?
What did I learn here?
So I think some of those things were definitely reading it out loud and imagining it performed. And also, I actually dictate my books when I'm writing them anyway, so I find that's quite helpful. I've read it out loud to start with, and the computer's transcribed it for me. So I think those ones, there's more of a authentic voice, my voice, going into it anyway. And so that's really helped. And then it's just things like the pacing and the flow. You'll hear if words are pretty strung together when you perform them, that you don't necessarily, they look pretty as word forms, but they don't necessarily sound pretty.
So true.
Yeah. So lots of little things like that. It's such an interesting experience, and I learned so much from it. It's just been fantastic.
Okay, and so what would you recommend, or what are your tips then to people wanting to move into self-publishing their audiobooks? What are the things that they absolutely must be thinking about when they go into doing something like this?
All right, I'd probably say, like I do with anyone who comes to me with a book idea, write a series, because series sell. Like, if you've got one, you can sell the next one, then you can sell the next one. And it's the same thing with audiobooks. The people who have absolutely loved this are almost guaranteed to buy the next one and then the next one. And so that's just a given in this day and age. People love those. And then, there's all these great things you can do. So when Miles has recorded the next two, I'm going to put them together in a box set. So that's going to be like another product that you can make money on. And let's face it, it's all about making money. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely options like that. And then choosing the right narrator for the job. I mean, if I'd just chosen anyone or myself, it just wouldn't be the same. So, yeah, really, really thinking about who they are and what they can bring to the party and in terms of their voice and their backgrounds. So, yeah, it is. It's really important in that respect.
Sarah and Miles, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. I've learned so much. I really have. And you've got me so excited about what our authors are able to do now and what our actors and artists are able to do in that field. I'm really excited to see where it goes and what you guys do with it with all of your books. Sarah, can you please tell everyone where to find you and your books?
Yeah, you can find me, my podcast, my books, my publishing house, my retreats and everything else that I do at sarahwilliamsauthor.com. And if you're in Brisbane or the Gold Coast at the end of September, you can actually come and meet me and Miles at Germside and Carindale Libraries, the Queensland Writers' Centre, and Books by the Bridge in the Gold Coast.
So head on down there and say hi. And Miles, where can people find you? What are you up to?
Well, they can go and watch a movie called Danger Close, which is, I think, due to come out on the big screens. It's a big war movie about the Battle of Long Tan in Vietnam, directed by Preece Stenders, who did Red Dog. So that's a big $30 million film. I think it's got a big wide cinema release soon, the next couple of weeks. Other than that, I'm actually putting together a couple of projects, a factual documentary series for TV, and also a drama series that I'm writing, directing and producing. So I'm busy too.
That sounds very exciting. It has been such a pleasure talking to you too. I can't wait to get you back on here and see how it all goes in the future. Thank you. Bye.
See you guys.
And that's it for this episode. Go to our website for all the episodes, for all the podcasts and for all the information, www.writesforwomen.com. You can find us on Facebook at Rights for Women and Twitter and Instagram at W4W Podcast. Can't wait to catch up with you in another fortnight. Until then, go and live your best life. This podcast episode was produced and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting.